All right, everyone, and welcome to episode 16 of the Porchcast. We are broadcasting from True's Acid Temple today, and we appropriately so, we're being joined by Nick Nuns, founder of True Brewing. Our other co-hosts today are Corey Peltz and Chris Day, myself, Tristan Chan. So let's jump right into it. There's tons to get into today. Lots going on just around, and then also I really want to touch base on kind of the dawn of festival season with Nick. Nick, you just got back from the Extreme Beer Fest, right?
Yeah, that was awesome.
Out in Boston?
One of the better fests I think I've ever done.
Okay, that's interesting. What really, in your opinion, distinguishes a good festival?
Man, I think there's a lot of kind of variables that go into it.
Yeah.
The best ones are the ones that are, you can tell that they put a lot of forethought into how they're gonna lay out all the booths, how many volunteers are going to need to be doing, all the ancillary tasks that are involved with like throwing beer fest. The caliber of breweries that go to some of these festivals, I think that one was really cool because it was an invitational. So I didn't really see a bad brewery there, which was really awesome. Obviously, we can't always have that luxury in certain markets or certain areas to do something like that, but I think that really set that apart in my mind as far as the value that's given to the customers and the attendees at a festival like that.
Totally. We'll get back into more festival talk here in just a moment, but I want to hear a little bit about True. How you guys came about, and then also the evolution to starting the Acid Temple. Now, True has the distinction of being the Denver's only Dave Matthews band themed brewery, right?
Yeah.
Is that correct?
That's what like when I walked through the door, first thing I'm like, besides the smell of patchouli, which is omnipresent, and distant sound of tambourines, I think I'm gonna get a really great beer.
Nick wakes up in the morning.
We're actually scheduled to release our new Kolsch into me.
Yeah. That's great. Kolsch into me. Alright, I'm looking
for
that.
Trademark.
Guys.
No, you all have the distinction of being a metal-themed brewery, and I think that's one of the first things that come up. Do you feel like that's kind of like, I mean, you all go beyond that. You all go beyond just being a metal brewery, but do you ever feel like that's ever kind of too much on the forefront of your identity here?
Yeah, I think sometimes we get, not necessarily bummed out, but it definitely becomes sort of the gateway part of the conversation.
Sure.
And it's not necessarily like, True Brewing is brewing amazing hoppy beers and sour beers. Mm-hmm. It's always the first thing that people say is like, metal brewery, True Brewing.
Yeah.
Which is fine. It starts a conversation and totally. It sets us apart. Mm-hmm. So I think that really has helped us in a lot of ways, and I don't regret it.
Sure.
But, it always is a lot more interesting to me when people are like, are talking about what beers we're brewing, and,
absolutely,
and less about just sort of the angle and the sort of secondary, not secondary, but the other interests that we have as a business.
I always find it interesting. People are always saying, like, yeah, you got to go to True. It's a metal brewery, but everyone's nice. Like, metal people aren't
yeah.
nice. Like, people that wear black are, like, still devil.
Right.
It's, or falses, like, in their society. Like, that's not a deal. Like, they should be nice. If you want your business to do well, you should be nice. And that is one of the best things about True, is that you guys are all fucking super nice.
I think, yeah, everybody, the common misperception of, like, metalheads being mean people, you've come across it, obviously, Corey, being,
totally.
In the scene to some degree as well, but it's like, there's this, like, the metal people I know on Earth are some of the nicest, most genuine people I've ever met.
Without a doubt, yeah, so I feel like it's always, like, a misnomer when someone says, oh, you should go to True because they're metal, but they're also nice.
Super
yeah.
nice dudes.
Yeah, yeah.
It should be, you should go to True, it's metal and they're really nice.
Right, exactly. Like,
we get it.
Like, maybe you don't enjoy the music, but, like, I think that's one of
yeah.
the best parts. And, like, that also speaks accolades to where you guys are at, and that you guys are taking care of house because everyone recognizes that you're nice, metal aside.
Well, aside from that, I think it's just funny that, like, such a strong part of, the identity, but I kind of like when I hear people bring up, oh yeah, it's that metal brewery. I kind of imagine you being like, hey guys, we actually like comedy too. So like just like bringing up all
these kinds of other stuff that we're into.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Half the time you walk in when we're like not open, like if Zach or Allison are brewing or something, they'll be like kind of like Waylon Jennings on or some shit
yeah.
like that. So it's just like it's our main musical interest, but we're into so many other things beyond just metal. And yeah, branching into comedy, motorcycles, bicycles,
sure.
You know,
awesome art.
Order.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. Like the art is
very
always
big
a big
art.
Component.
Yeah, yeah.
So Elvino from A Feather and Bone, did, what's his new venture?
He has his new, he just had a photography show. That actually just came down.
It was awesome. It looked so great. And then, you know, Unicorpse Grinder with all of his awesome art that does all of your label work. You know, Sam, he's such a rad dude. And, like, there are so many other interests that I think people may be overlooking. So it's just important to, like, bring all that.
Yeah, so, like, the food and beer pairings and cheese pairings and things like that. There's always been a variety of events happening there that appeal to everyone.
And recently you just had all the homebrewers from Fermentologists come in and get rid of some bottles and buy some pints from you guys.
It was a real cool event. It was nice to see. Like, we haven't really done a lot of outreach for the homebrew community yet, so it was nice to kind of dip our toes into that a little bit.
And it's cool because you kind of came from this, and we talked about this, I think, a few episodes ago, but this kind of an all-star cast of homebrewers that now everybody's kind of got their own venture going. That's kind of a neat story.
It's definitely true. Some of us were lucky enough. I feel like I was lucky enough to get in to the industry before a lot of the the newest wave of brewers, where you're seeing more spin-offs from, you know, Avery or Great Divide or what have you. I think I got really lucky because you know, when we opened, our beer was tall, you know, it was serviceable, I guess, but it wasn't the caliber it is now, that's for sure.
Sure.
I always joke that our beer got better when I stopped brewing it.
But it's interesting. You all did open with some really unique styles. I think having that Grisette on so early has been something that I've been really impressed with. I kind of bring this back to the fact that Country Boy Brewing in my hometown of Lexington, Kentucky, about 4 years ago when they opened with a Goza, and that was before anybody really knew what a Goza was. But
and you guys were the same, right?
Yeah, about 4 years ago.
Yeah.
They opened with a Goza.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I think that's such a cool element of it, where a lot of new breweries kind of have to play it safe and have to, you know, stick to the core styles, which is great. There's nothing wrong with that. I think that it's great to really try to focus on dialing in something that people are more used to, but it's a little bit more risky, but more exciting for you all to launch with something so unique like that.
Yeah, I think you're going to see less, I don't know. I mean, everybody's always going to want to have an IPA style, all those sorts of things. Mm-hmm. But I don't think that's, you know, I've seen like maybe certain examples of breweries opening up where they're still doing the amber wheat.
Yep.
You know, kind of what you might consider the heritage style.
Dude, Brad's coming back though.
It's almost like they're ready to plan online.
I agree.
There's nothing wrong with that, but I think that if you're focusing on some of these styles that were potentially, for lack of a better term, more relevant maybe 10 years ago, I don't think people are going to be as interested. And that's a dual problem. That's not just a problem with breweries and their marketing sense, but also the consumer base.
Yeah.
Like, it's a shame that everybody's only interested in IPAs, sours, you know, all that sort of, you know, whatever's hip right now.
Sure.
I think that it'll be really exciting when a lot more of the consumer base is interested in a wider variety of styles and can actually appreciate some of those styles as well.
Totally.
So they can drink a brown and be like, this is a good brown versus this is not a good brown, or like, I like this brown for X, Y, Z reason.
Well, I think your stout is a classic example of that. I think it's one of the best stouts in the city. And it's really, really great that, you know, you all are known for, you know, great hoppy beers and also great sour beers, but also, damn, making a killer stout is just
well,
like...
And I know Steve Krowski from the Colorado Brewers Guild and I always rap on this, but like, we wait for Dunwich Porter.
Yeah.
We cannot wait for it to happen. And once it hits, like, Steve hits me up and he's like, you going? I'm like, yeah, let's do this. And even though it's not always together, he's like, I'm on my way. And I was like, yeah, it's happening. So it speaks again to like kind of the classic style of things, but also doing it in a way where it's like, you know, reinvigorated. It's a new for a good reason.
We did, you know, so two things. To that porter, Zach actually took medals as a home brewer with that recipe a couple of times. Mm-hmm. So that was a really, really solid recipe that he had sort of up his cuff.
Sure.
And he had his prior employer, he did not want to give it to them, but he wanted to give it to us. So
that's
that was
awesome.
It was pretty cool that when he came in, he was like, I don't want to do this. And I was like, absolutely. I know it's supposedly a great recipe. And,
yeah.
lo and behold, it is a berry recipe.
Absolutely.
There's somewhere else that's going to go with that as well. But
porter stout?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Oh, just
when
stout,
you order stout, don't call it stout O, just call it stout, please.
Stout O.
Just stout. So everyone knows it's stout, it's like Sun the band, not Sun O the band. Just speaking from my metal sensibility. I got your back, man.
Thanks, buddy. Yeah. Appreciate that.
Now, we're broadcasting from the Acid Temple today. Can you tell us a little bit about that evolution and you know, what it took for you all to get to this point where we're at today?
Back-breaking, soul-crushing work.
Yeah.
And probably what I would say is about a year of, like, the worst, kind of the most difficult time in our history so far.
Tell us a little bit more about that.
Yeah, so we signed the lease on the space over a year ago. And
for those who aren't familiar, explain the Acid Temple.
Yeah, so our original brewery is over on Broadway in Denver, 2nd Broadway. It's our, you know, our pub, for lack of a better term for it. That's where we have our original brew house, you know, small three-barrel system with a couple 7-barrel fermenters, very, very space-constrained, and very low production just by ramification of the design of the space, unfortunately. So we were always running out of beer, you know, pretty much through our entire history. We could never really keep up with the demand for, you know, the number of people coming in the shop room. So after a couple of years and some practicing, I guess, or you know, some initial brews of sour beer over at Broadway, we started looking a little bit better on paper, and the banks started actually talking to us, and we were able to finding a new space and setting up a whole new production facility over here. So now we have, on top of our original brewery, another warehouse, 5,000 square feet. All of our oak is over here, and we have a 10-barrel Colorado-made brew house, as well as, you know, a couple of stainless fermenters and whatnot. So most of our production now, volume-wise, is coming from the Acid Temple. And most of our volume now is going to be in single bottle 375, and it's all going to be mixed culture sour beer. So all of our clean beer production is staying over at Broadway. So anytime you see something on draft that's IPA or stout, it's cannibalizing from our ability to keep the tap reserved. But everything you're seeing on the shelves as far as in stores or at restaurants, it's in a bottle, it's coming out of here.
So that's great because we're able to find a lot more product on the shelves. What things are you distributing now?
So as I said, all the stuff that we're really distributing, starting on January 1, we have a full-time, we now have a full-time sales rep, and her name's Kat. She's been killing it. She's been with us for over a year now, working the bar, and I gave her the opportunity to try something new out, and she's been doing a really great job, so kudos to her. It's been awesome having that kind of out of my hands and in the hands of somebody who can focus on doing that. So we've been getting all up and down the front range to mostly liquor stores right now, because it's just kind of being that we're doing mostly bottles, it makes sense to go there first. And some of the restaurants understand what we're trying to do. But
So Grey Watcher, Cursed.
Yeah.
Grey Watcher actually is going away.
Oh.
Yeah, we're not going to be doing the four packs anymore.
Goodbye, table.
All right, Corey just left.
So
yeah. Coming back.
So I'll explain that actually.
That's fine. I'll just cry by myself.
It's okay.
We made the best bloody beer. I'm serious. So good.
Not dog.
That would actually be like super tasty, super saline. Yeah.
So, Grey Watcher, our grisette, and Prehistoric Dogger goes over both kettle sour beers. We were doing them at Broadway, getting really good results. We were doing them here, getting okay results. When you start doing kettle souring at a larger scale, there's a lot more variables that come in into play. It becomes a lot more difficult. So, after a point of trying to do both of those beers in four packs of 12-ounce bottles, we kind of looked at it again and said, like, is this something we really want to be doing? And decided that we were more interested in doing some mixed culture beer instead of doing kettle souring. And that's not to shit on kettle souring or anything like that. We still think it's a great process. Mm-hmm. I think that you can yield some really, really great results. And in fact, a lot of our oak-aged sour beer that we were brewing way back in the day at Broadway was kettle sour. We think that you can actually get some really, really good results. That being said, it's a lot easier for us to, and a lot more interesting for us to maintain a mixed culture here, which is, you know, just a blend of Saccharomyces, Lactobacillus, wild yeasts that we've harvested from a variety of sources. We think that that's a lot more interesting than doing the kettle sour. As such, the beers are going to come out a lot more highly carbonated. They need a bulkier bottle, and it just makes more sense to put them in 375s because they're built to withstand that sort of carbonation level and just that process and everything.
Right.
Speaking of, you all just released a pair of, well, actually, you've been producing and releasing several bottles recently, but the most recent one was the collaboration you all did with Prairie.
Mm-hmm.
And also before that, you know, you had Red Chaos, which, in my opinion, one of the best beers that I've had this entire year.
Thanks, man.
Tell us a little bit more about those and some of the more recent ones that you all have come out with.
Sure. One of the other focuses we're having is trying to capture a sense of place in our beer. So as such, we're looking to establish relationships with local fruit purveyors. So last summer, towards the tail end, we went out to Hotchkiss to get the Montmorency cherries that we used in the Chaos. We used over 2 pounds per gallon of cherries in that beer, which is why I think it's so intensely cherryful. So that was a really cool sort of process, and it was neat to see, you know, to actually like go out to the farm and be like tasting the fruit right off the tree.
Sure.
You know, it was awesome. It was just a really, really cool experience. And then on top of that, with the Prairie collab, we wanted to, you know, achieve that same thing of capturing that sense of place. So we used both Colorado and Oklahoma peaches. We were looking for some sort of overlap in fruit, and really close to the Prairie production facility, there's apparently some peach orchards. So they were able to box some of those up, freight them out to us, and we threw them in a barrel with that beer and let it sit for a while, and it turned out really, really cool.
That's awesome.
It's an awesome
the response beer. Has been so positive, I think, for all these beer.
So the release day was one of our biggest days.
Yeah.
It's like a barley pop. I mean, it's so effervescent and so peachy.
Mm-hmm.
But there's still that salinity that you get, that like briny characteristic that just makes senses for whatever reason. And I feel like the blend is just right where it should be.
Yeah.
And obviously won't go well long term. Like, don't cellar it, but like,
yeah,
you can hang on to it for a little bit and just see what happens. But like right now, it's tasting really great. So you guys are also doing another collaboration, but different beer altogether with Prairie. Is that correct? And they'll release it out there.
So we
nationally.
We went out to Oklahoma to brew with those guys, and that was a really eye opening experience to kind of go to the middle of nowhere in Oklahoma, sort of thing, to go brew with them. But there's
Krebs, right?
Krebs, Oklahoma.
Woo!
Yeah, it's literally the middle of nowhere.
Thrills a minute.
it was interesting.
So how does a collaboration like that come together? You know. I want to transition this into a little discussion about Collaboration Fest, which is coming up in, I believe, 2.5 weeks. I'd love to hear a little bit more about how two breweries come together, what the process is like in terms of determining what kind of beer that they want to brew, and then settling on, you know, all the details and you know, the brewing together, actually brewing together.
Well, in the case of the Prairie thing, we had so one of the brewers, the head brewers over at Prairie, Michael Lally, was a very big fan of ours from day one. He's like an old school metalhead.
Sure.
So I think the year we opened, he came in around GABF because he was in town, and just he's told the story of like him coming with a bunch of his friends, like hanging out at the brewery, and them like being like, okay, we're gonna go check out some other things. He was like, I'm not going. This is the best. I'm not fucking leaving.
It's awesome.
I'll see you at the hotel later.
That is one of the weirdest things. I feel like anytime I go into True, I'm going to run into like a brewer from some random place. It's like, oh yeah, I'm from Cigar City.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm from Stone. Like, no idea how all these people know about it and find it. Is it surreal for you to have such a huge following, not just like with beer drinkers, but also in the brewing industry?
Oh, that's the best part, man. I love the fact that we have a lot of positive support from, you know, just the beer consumers, but having that same level of support from the beer producers is huge. I mean, that's when you have the respect of your peers. What else?
Yeah, that's got to be incredible.
Right. And it makes the branching for things like collaboration so much easier when people are like, man, fuck, we got to make a beer together. Let's do this.
Yeah.
Well, it's kind of like, yeah. I wouldn't go into a Chinese restaurant if there weren't other Chinese people eating there. It's the same same kind of thinking,
true.
Right? I mean,
it's very true.
You don't. Hey, no. I wouldn't go to a brewery if there weren't other brewers appreciating
that makes
consistently.
Sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. What is such a weird like cross appeal? I know I've told you this story before, and he showed you the picture of being like Avery Sourfest or something, and seeing this old couple in like their late 60s or maybe mid 70s, and the guy's wearing a True shirt,
yeah.
and he's dressed like your grandpa otherwise. Talking about like, he loves that place, and he loves to bring his friends because he knows that they don't like metal, and he's like just the hugest kick out of it.
Yeah.
It's weird. It's got a broad appeal. I don't understand. Sarah Howlett from Former Future is out at Modern Times' beer festival.
Funk Invitational.
Yeah, I think. Thanks for the invitation, guys.
Mother.
But she said that she counted 5 t-shirts and 1 hat at that event.
Oh my god.
That's awesome.
That's
pretty
great.
That's pretty cool.
Maybe some grassroots hinting and being like, hey guys. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe you might want to consider True.
Yeah.
That's
Do
a
we
funky want to
talk
addition.
About the beer we're drinking now?
Totally. So we are...
The Coors or the...
Well, there's nothing wrong with the Banquet. We are sampling a 2013 or 2013 batch of Ranger Creek Small Batch Series number 7, which is an Imperial Stout. Ranger Creek is out of San Antonio, and they're known for being a brewery and distillery. So,
interesting.
A couple of buddies were getting together. They're like, we should start a brewery. They're like, yeah, let's do that. And someone's like, oh, but Texas loves whiskey. And they're like, let's do that. And they're like, why don't we do both? And I think at the time, 2013, this is when old Texas laws were in place before real ale and Freetail Brewing started changing the scene down there, as well as our friends over at Jester King. So they had a lot of limitations with ABV and whether they could actually call beer or call it ale or malt liquor. But these guys have been doing amazing things since then. So I actually picked these up when I was in Austin, when I was in Dallas back in 2014. And so it's tasting really great right now. It's
actually one of the better
Imperial Stouts I've had in a while.
Yeah.
I fail to see how 8% gets into the Imperials.
Right.
Things,
exactly. Isn't it supposed to be 9, right?
I mean,
what's the definition?
Strict guideline.
There should be.
I wouldn't say that 8% in this day and age is Imperial.
What do you think it's done now? Do you think it's, I mean, it's done well for a couple of years?
Sorry, it's got a little bit of like a grape.
Fruity.
Wine grape thing
in
the nose, you know, like a fruity thing. And it's got a little bit of a tartness.
It's weird.
Right? Mixed with like an astringency.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Super big one, but.
It does have like a kind of like cinnamon finish for me.
You could see that. It's almost got more of a Rausch beer.
Smoky
dark.
It does have a little smokiness to it for sure.
We won't be doing the Ranger Creek barley wine, which I brought, but everyone has agreed that it's Sunday and that barley wines are not what we want to drink. So I'm just going to take this to the dome before I go to the John Moreland show tonight at
Soiled Dead.
Let's see.
If we work through these other beers, perhaps opinions will change. You never know.
We have some good beers to drink, so that's exciting.
Well, I also am recovering from yesterday's Avery Strong Ale Fest.
Yeah, you put it on, dude. You get 16 tickets, right? Who needs 16 tickets?
Yeah.
That's ridiculous.
Obscene amount.
Talk about beer festivals. 16 tickets is way too many tickets.
That's insane. Do you think that, like, I feel like I see, as a brewer, something of a lashback against the strong ale thing in general.
Mm-hmm.
It could be that I'm mostly talking to brewers, and we all like to drink a lot of beer.
Yeah.
So we don't want big beer.
Sessionable, crushable beer.
Yeah, so I'm seeing, like, a movement away from strong ales back towards...
Oh, absolutely.
Beer styles. Do you guys
I think there's a huge rise in sessionable beers, and we talk about this.
Yeah.
You know, like, personally, I'm usually drinking more Kolsch's, Pilsner's, you know, lighter fare nowadays,
right.
And I think you all are the same way.
I think moving from, so I think as you jump into craft beer, a lot of people are just introduced to this Imperial Stouts, Giant Sours, tongue grating, like, a demon crawling up your tongue IPA.
Yeah.
Like, we just get into all these crazy beers. And then you realize, like, there are styles that came before that that pave the way that are much more pleasurable
yeah.
that make more sense. You can have one tongue grating IPA and then you're like, well, my palate's blown. This sucks. Like, now I'm done.
Do you think as a drinker you go from like, first you're used to very boring things and then you're like, whoa, this is insane.
Yeah, you try and jump and you grab everything and then you start coming back.
And then you're like, oh, I just want something
simpler. I think strong ales have a place for cellaring or for trying with a meal or having it shared in a group, but I feel like you have to almost come back to a sessionable style or a crushable style if you want to do it for long periods of time. If you're at the brewery and you're brewing beer all day, you want a 3.9 table beer all day to drink.
Oh, yeah.
You don't want to be ripping through IPAs all day.
Well, I think you make a good point of like these kind of extreme polarizations of the beer. I think it's good in a sense when it comes to education, because I think that there are often beer styles that you never realize could exist.
Yeah,
that
you
could
skip over so
that
much.
Could, you know, be considered a beer. And so kind of at the beginning, when you're just trying to get as many different kind of tastes in your lexicon as possible, it's good for you to discover. But, you know, as Nick brought up, you know, kind of bringing it back to home and coming back to where you started with these nice sessionable beers, it's really how you appreciate beer a little bit more and how you, you know, get the most out of your tasting experience is where I'm
It probably makes a better festival to have people drinking regular beer as opposed to giant strong beers, but tell us a little bit more about some of the like outstanding beers you had at Strong Ale Fest that you probably didn't imbibe too much of. You had a little bit of it.
Yeah, honestly, when I go to these fests, it's really to the point where I'm asking for, you know, a fourth of an ounce of a pour. And, you know, the volunteers are always giving me these weird looks. I'm like, no, I'm in it for the long haul. But,
professional, please.
It's America.
Yeah, right. Totally. But the great thing is that, you know, these do showcase some really creative stuff that people are creating. I think everybody gets really, you know, on the surface, people will be like, oh, there's Parabola or there's Bourbon County. But, you know, we've had those beers before. And so what I like to see is kind of looking at Avery and seeing they always bring some really unique stuff that they generally don't have available. So one of my favorites was their Listaria, which was their bourbon barrel imperial stout with coffee, chocolate, and vanilla. I think the vanilla flavor came out really, really nicely with the caramel and like kind of like a caramel base. But
Please tell me how strong was that, Tristan?
That was 17.5%.
Oh, well, no, yeah, talking about sessionable.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. You could probably have like four or five of those before
okay,
going
but,
to
but dialing it back down a little bit.
You'd be going a lot inside your house. But
there was a Raja-infused beer. So their Raja, which is their double IPA.
Yeah.
It was infused with green tea, mallow flowers, and corn flowers, as well as strawberry and rhubarb. And I thought that was such a great beer because it was extremely well balanced. That the Raja on its own is a little bit more on the dank side than I would
it's
like.
It's astringent, right?
It's
big and heady.
But this really, all like kind of the floral notes of the actual flowers that were involved really kind of balanced it out. And then also, you know, they did a Golden Flowers, which was one where they used Colorado wildflower honey, and that was really, really great. Their Chupacabra was kind of similar to like a Hunapu type beer with habanero peppers.
Amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, Chupacabra's the
to totally. But in terms of kind of outside breweries, you know, Melvin was there, which was great. I had some really great stuff from Powder Keg. The Vietnamese brunch was a classic, but the one that I was really, really impressed with, and this is something that's been a theme the past few months, is Weldworks. I mean, they brought their coconut Media Noche, which is going to be their anniversary beer coming up next weekend. But the beer that stole the show to me was the Mexican Achromatic. Great cinnamon notes to it.
Right.
Really great balance. I just couldn't stop drinking that one.
Yeah.
So kind of talking on the theme of beer festivals as a whole, Nick, you kind of were engaged in a kind of discussion on social media recently about just the practice of how breweries are involved with beer festivals and you know, the idea of paying breweries for their own beer. And, you know, we had a post that came out last year where I kind of expounded upon the idea of have beer festivals jump the shark. You know, a lot of issues that are that we're seeing these days with beer festivals revolve around the fact that there are just way too many of them. And it seems like everybody and their mother is trying to throw a beer festival just to throw a beer festival. I think, you know, we haven't really reached the point of oversaturation when it comes to local breweries, but right. Beer festivals, we're kind of to the point where it's like, really, do we really need another beer festival?
Right, and I feel like there's a good amount of folks that are doing it now, and maybe there's even a point where people are starting to see, or starting to think, maybe is this lucrative, and we would ask people not to think that way, and I think that maybe we're starting to see too many of those, and I mean, I know from the brewer standpoint of things, there's a finite amount of beer, and for you to donate to every single festival is unrealistic. Yeah. So you almost have to comb through and figure out what makes sense for your brewery. What do you think about that?
Well, I think that with breweries of our size and, you know, in actual conversations with some of our peers or compatriots or whatever you want to say, I think that the donating beer to festivals is going to go away. Right. I don't think a lot of us are happy with that as a practice, regardless of who is going to be the recipient of some undisclosed amount of proceeds from the event. We are all running businesses, just as much as the festival organizer is running a business. And I think that it's not our problem to make sure that they have the necessary resources to run that fest without us getting our, you know, what's due to us for that event as well.
What I think is interesting is that a lot of times these festival people that are running festivals are asking for a donation of beer, and this is so that they can raise money for a charity, which looks really great when you are donating your beer to this festival, but you're donating it to the festival, you don't necessarily get to write that off as donating it to said charity a lot of the times. So the crossover is sometimes you can, sometimes you can't. Sometimes it actually looks like the festival is donating to said charity, and then that's, they're getting the write-off on that, which is almost a false presence in that you guys are the ones donating the beer and earning the money for said festival.
Right. Yeah, I think, you know, a lot of breweries in general are charitable organizations. You know, last year for our True Gives a Shit event, we raised something like $3,000 that we gave to a charity. And we are more than happy to be charitable. We like to dictate to whom we would be charitable.
Sure.
You know?
Right.
So I think that when you're seeing these, the biggest issue with some of these festivals is just the disclosure of
the transparency of it.
Exactly. Mm,
yeah.
It's all about transparency. Mm. So I think that the easiest way to ensure that it's not an issue is just for breweries to be invoicing for the beer and for the festival organizers to determine how much they need to charge for a ticket to make sure that the numbers balance out.
Absolutely.
And we've seen at certain festivals where the festival will pay for the beer,
mm-hmm.
and they do a very good job afterward of cleaning up and making sure that they get the barrels afterwards, or if it's cans. I was recently at the Boulder Reservoir Brew Run, and they pay for the beer. So at the end of the day, some cats were trying to run around after the call for the last beer, and they were like, absolutely not. We paid for these beers. These are ours. And I thought it was a great way of going around things. To also like help hold people accountable that don't need beers at the end of a festival, and also like take care of their inventory. And I thought it was great that they paid for the beer, because that helps the brewery be like, man, that's a great festival. I want to contribute to them, because not only are they paying for the beer, but they're doing things properly. They're running a tight ship.
Well, the other thing too, like maybe this is totally off base in terms of perspective, but I've always thought early on beer festivals were often an opportunity for like, especially newer breweries, to kind of market themselves to an audience, or like to grow like excitement about their brewery. But I see now so many festivals, even ones that are run by people that you don't know, you have no idea what the motivation is, they are really using the brand recognition of the breweries to push the festival.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think you know, you could almost draw an analogy between this and in the like online creative world. Where you know, people expect you to do work on spec or exposure. You know, it's like, that's fine. Exposure is great and everything, but like I can't take exposure to the bank and pay my rent.
Yeah, it's like it's now you go to a doctor and you're like, yeah, you know, cure my cancer, and then you know, I'll tell people about it.
Exposures that I got from this festival. You know, it just for us, it doesn't even exposure isn't even an issue anymore. You know, people come to the festivals, and we're now one of the ones that's forming a line because people are now, you know, aware that we're going to have something cool at our booth. You know, so it's like we don't. Sorry, like we just don't really need your exposure.
And so I mean, how did when you started out, you guys were kind of at a place where you're saying, come to True. Come to have our beer here. We don't necessarily have a lot of it outside of market. And as you're moving towards that, you kind of built that exposure from within, saying, hey, come to our culture, try this out, and kind of move from there, which I think is great. A great way of exploiting yourselves, saying, like, hey, this is where, what we are. This is how we run shit.
So what do you look for in terms of a beer festival? Like, what kind of meets your criteria of something that's worthy? Because like you said, you don't really need the exposure anymore, but you all are still very much involved in the community and are out there for, you know, some of the festivals that we really enjoy. We generally see you all there, and I think it's for good reason.
Yeah, I you know, we're picky about what we go to. I would say we get a lot of we get a lot of requests to attend particular festivals that we turn down because it's just another beer fest. You know, I think that. It's great if you have, you can run X neighborhood beer fest if you want to, but what's the angle there?
Sure.
Like, I don't really care. You know, I don't need to go to a South Denver beer fest. I'm sorry, because it's like we're not really in South Denver very much, you know? It's not quite our wheelhouse at this point. So for me, when I'm trying to pick a festival that I want to attend, it's mostly what's the angle? Mm-hmm. You know, what are you doing to make this festival more interesting? You know, Two Parts always does a really good job with their festivals because everything's got an angle. You've got Sesh Fest, Collab Fest, Festivus. All these festivals have some sort of angle, and I think that angle helps differentiate it from just being another beer festival where it's just an excuse for people to get hammered.
So if you flip it around, imagine you're not a brewer, what do you look for when you're attending a beer festival?
I don't know. I don't do it anymore, so it's like I'm so out of that domain.
Maybe we can talk for a little bit. I mean, for me, I think it's really like, is it well run? Like, you hate going and like, there's, you know, there are no glasses, or there's no water, or there are lines because the layout is bad.
They're in a tight location, so maybe they hosted in a hotel that sucks balls.
Or they didn't tell people to bring enough beer, or they decide to oversell the event at the last moment.
Right. No, and I also think time is a huge piece of this. So we were talking about a little bit earlier before we jumped on that sometimes if you give a festival too much time, it allows people to get a little saucy, and then at the end of the festival, you're like, man, I don't know if I want to deal with all these folks.
Yeah, and I'm actually a fan of the way Avery does it with their ticketing system. They're not the only ones, but I think it makes you pick and choose about where you're going, so it encourages a little bit more responsible drinking and makes it more special and less disposable.
Absolutely. So those last four tickets.
Whatever, dude. As they struck bells and they're like, do I have hands anymore? I don't really know where I am.
Avery was always a good one. You know, I met a lot of people that I ended up hiring who were forming really good relationships with at Avery Strong Fest like 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. It seems like they haven't really changed the model. It's funny that you brought up on Strong Ale. In my mind, I was envisioning you at the Row, not at the new place. The Alley, rather. So it's, I don't know, I'd love to see what it looks like now with their new location.
Yeah, I haven't been to the new location. I've only been to Strong Ale at the Alley, and I just think of tots, pretty much.
Yeah.
Like, glorious sweet potato tots that are now foregone.
I knew we'd be going a long time. Everybody's favorite fest, if they were going to pick some, just here in Denver or nationally. Like
when we mentioned it earlier, the Sierra Nevada beer camp was amazing. Was awesome. There was a super low turnout, so there was like a good number of people. The number of beers that were amazing there, and the number of brewers pouring there and celebrities was amazing. And so that was one of my favorites. I mean, I feel like we got to throw some love to our Imbibe Two Parts folks, because I feel like everything that they do has been pretty amazing.
Festivus is always one of my favorite festivals. This year they need to find a better venue.
Bigger venue?
A better, bigger and better.
This past year
was
the Rockies,
which was cool. It's just a little far outside of the the urban center, I guess you might say. But that's always been a really cool festival.
Yeah.
Like, it's always that everybody's having a fucking good time.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And not like getting super hammered, but like getting just right on that. Like,
yeah.
Right.
Well, that's interesting you bring that up, because this year at Wings of the Rockies, they didn't have kind of the dance party component, which is something that we kind of miss, because it's always great for people watching.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that it being on a Sunday this year, and you can talk to the organizers about that. There's a long list of reasons why that whole thing got put out into that venue. Mm-hmm. But I think having it on a Sunday was interesting to see, because I think people were being a lot more responsible.
Assume a sense of responsibility, being like, all right, I gotta keep it together. It is the Lord's Day. Yeah, exactly.
Who's Day?
Yeah. That
is a great fest. Collaboration Fest is always very exciting to see what shows up there.
I think
the
concept of it is really at the core of what craft beer is all about, and I love that that they were able to bring all of these great breweries together from all across
and
the country.
Huge. And like what growing from just kind of a color thing to national. Mm-hmm. And well, international even.
It's blown up over the last, what, it's been 3 years, 4 years now?
Yeah.
3 years.
Three, yeah.
The Avery Sour and IPA Fest, Strong Ale Fest.
And
a new one for me that was really cool was Bull and Bush's Christmas Beer Fest, which is vintage. I had beer older than I've been able to drink alcohol.
Yeah, that's amazing.
But we also have another great fest coming up soon, the New Kids on the Block.
That's right.
I really enjoy that one too.
Yeah, that's really kind of the only beer festival that we generally lend our names to. I think that the concept is pretty neat in that it showcases breweries that are 2 years or younger in existence. So the brewery had to have been founded in the past 2 years. So we constantly have a rotating carousel of breweries that get to showcase some of the new stuff that they're creating. It's a part 80s dance party, part beer festival, and it takes place at the lobby. We do pay for the beers. We set a base price, so if it's not within a brewery's budget to participate, completely understand. But that goes directly towards actually paying the venue to use that space to shut it down for the evening.
So do you think of some of the names we have this year?
Yeah, absolutely. So we've got Barrels, Bayer Brewing, Weldworks, which again we were expounding upon earlier as one of our favorites of the year. Who else do we have? I'm trying to think.
It's really surprising at that fest.
Ratio. Cerebral, Call to Arms. We've got a really strong group.
Good ones this year.
Yeah, really strong group of breweries that are participating.
Well, you never know what's going to show up. Like last year, Troy Casey there pouring beer for you.
Yeah, that's right.
So cool festival. If you haven't been, certainly say check it out.
Totally. Little Machine, Gold Spot, a lot of great breweries that have been popping up in the past 2 years. Let's quickly go around, and as we do with every episode, let's talk really briefly about the best beer that we had this week. Corey, I'll let you kick things off.
Cool. I've had a handful of new beers this week. I usually don't imbibe as many new beers as I have this week. I got a mixed sixer, which is the way to go, from one of our sponsors, Small Batch. Got some Odd 13 codenamed Superfan, which was great.
Did you see through it?
I did not. It was super hazy. It was hazy as all get out. It was hazy AF, which was great. I also tried Hop Troll. The beer, though, that I was most stoked on was Citrophonics, which is out of Oakshire.
Yeah.
It's a Citra American IPA. Super citrusy. Citrus Circus is the way I described it. Super delicious. At the point of location, trying the Lariat Lodge Golden, which I actually think Anthony from last week talked about it. Never been to Lariat Lodge in Evergreen, but that was a delicious beer. So
did you get roped while you're leaving?
No, I did not. There was no Lariats pulling me back in. There was also an infomercial on.
You got some bad jokes though when you got
there
back
was an
here,
infomercial
right?
on the speakers and on the big screens, and we actually commented on that saying, hey, maybe this isn't the vibe you're looking for at your
showing looping infomercials.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. What was infomercial for? Was it like, okay, was it chopping or like?
It wasn't. It wasn't Chop Block or any of the amazing things.
Did somebody do something in an overly frustrated manner?
The Trump University.
Without a doubt, I can't open this jar.
Don't you hate when you try to cook eggs? It's impossible. You've been trying for thousands of years.
Yeah, eggs are horrible.
Chris, what do you got? What'd you got? Have for this week?
I didn't have a lot of beer this week. I've been kind of under the weather, but I had two kind of beers that I've had before, but they're new every year. They're recently back. So I tried the new Wolf Picker from Odell, they do this. It's a seasonal release. It's a pale that they do with different hops every year. And this time they're using Cashmere and HBC 438, which I guess is a new experimental hop.
Man, Cashmere is so delicious.
Yeah.
That hop is so great.
Really, really delicious. Like tropical, they say coconut, papaya, and mango. I agree with that. Great beer if you can find it. And also, they brought back Meddler, which was like their Oud Bruin, which I haven't had since the last time it came out.
Beer.
Really good.
Nick, what do you got for this week?
I think I almost don't want to let this out of the bag because I want it to not be busy all the time over there, but Finn's Manor has probably one of the best beer lists in the city right now. They're just crushing it. And I had an Apex over there on Friday night, and that beer is just so good. Man.
Forgot that's, I had that also this week.
That's such really a good beer. I had drank that endlessly. Like, Lafleur and those guys over there are just like killing it. So,
yeah.
I had a Czech bar over there earlier this week.
I had one of those.
Terrace Bulba on draft. I've never had that before.
It's so good.
One of my favorites that I haven't mentioned from the Avery Strong Ale Festival was Grimm Brothers' barrel-aged Magic Mirror. It's their Imperial Coatbuster with, it kind of had a little bit of a tartness from the barrels that they used. Great kind of Brett strain flavors in there. I don't know if it was intended, but it definitely came out really, really well. Also, you know, we mentioned, you mentioned going over to, or actually I mentioned Call to Arms earlier in the show, but had their By Leticia, which is great, like Brett Saison and dry hop Brett Saison. It was fantastic. So, that was my pick of the week. So, well, guys, I think it was a great episode, and I really appreciate having Nick on the show with us. And just a reminder, we do want to be sure to get the word out for one of our great sponsors, First Draft Tap Room and Kitchen. They're located over on Larimer Street. They've got your pour your own draft system and great opportunity for you to try and sample little bits of several different beers. They've got 40 taps, lots of great beer options, kind of like an adult froyo for your mouth. So go out there,
handful,
give it a try.
Yeah, there's like three wines and then also cider on tap as well.
Yeah. Also, be sure to follow us on iTunes if you haven't done so already. Be sure to subscribe, and if you like the show, be sure to rate us. That's kind of the way that we can help boost our presence on the interwebs. So follow the Porchcast on iTunes, give us a good rating, and also be sure to tune in next week. Thanks so much, guys.
Thanks.